Listeners are advised Judge Gloria in this episode is a voice actor and not a real judge. This is not a real court and none of those mentioned are on trial. The scope and purpose of this episode is to create a more immersive listening experience through the events retold from the newspaper archives.
AIDS brings a response fighting from the government.
AIDS, the disease which claims life.
Welcome to AIDS The Lost Voices with me, William Hampson, and my co-host, Judge Gloria.
Mr. Hampson, please approach the bench.
Is it relevant to the matter at hand?
Did the accused put forward
in
a
this
defense?
Series, we re-examine HIV and AIDS-related crimes from the newspaper archives of the 80s, 90s and noughties.
Court, rise!
Please be seated. Mr. Hampson, please step up to the podcast microphone. It is my understanding we are here today to hear various accounts from the newspaper archives relating to the HIV/AIDS pandemic.
Yes, my lord. Another week of me sifting through the British newspaper archives of the 80s, 90s and noughties. And where this week we are looking at articles covering reckless transmission in regards to HIV and AIDS.
Mr. Hampson, I see from the file before me a newspaper article that you intend to rely on in your presentation of this case today.
That's right, my lord, where this case is first reported on the 13th of February 2001, where the BBC, in their article, wrote under the headline, Landmark AIDS Case Begins in Scotland, and the article states, a man has gone on trial in Glasgow for knowingly infecting a woman with the HIV virus in a case believed to be the first of its kind in Scotland. Stephen Kelly, 33, is charged with taking no precautions when having sex with a former girlfriend despite knowing he was HIV positive. Mr. Kelly contracted HIV in prison after sharing needles to inject heroin. He met mother of three, Anne Craig, in 1994 after leaving prison, but in court, Ms. Craig said he did not tell her about his condition for more than 3 months. Ms. Craig said initially Mr. Kelly had denied being infected and said he had tested negative in prison. It was only when Ms. Craig began feeling unwell and took a blood test that revealed she had contracted HIV that Mr. Kelly revealed the truth about his condition. Ms. Craig, 34, said at first Stephen told her he had only just discovered that he had caught the virus from a previous girlfriend, but she said he later changed his story. Quote, Mr. Kelly told me he had actually caught the virus in Glenochle prison and the story he told me was a fabrication, she said. Mr. Kelly denies telling Ms. Craig it was safe to have unprotected sex with him and alleges he told her the truth about his condition from the start. After learning that she had the HIV virus in March 1994, Ms. Craig stayed with Kelly for several months but went to the police after they broke up. The case continues. And as you'd expect, my lord, as the court case continues, so did the media interest, specifically newspaper reports. On the 15th of February 2001, The Guardian newspaper reports that the day prior, the court hears how Mr. Kelly was tested and learned he was HIV positive, where they ran the headline, HIV man in court over unsafe sex, and the article states, a man accused of recklessness in giving his girlfriend HIV had twice been warned of the necessity of safe sex, the High Court in Glasgow heard yesterday. Stephen Kelly, 33, of Proven Mill in Glasgow, denies endangering the life of Anne Craig by having sexual intercourse between December 1993 and March 1994, knowing he was infected with HIV. He is accused of culpable and reckless conduct in repeatedly having unsafe sex, even though she had no idea of his condition and he was fully aware of the risks. The court heard from Anne Thompson, a nurse treating HIV and drugs misuse, that she had told Kelly before and after he was tested for the virus of the dangers associated with unsafe sex. In 1993, she was in a team sent to Glenochle Prison, Stirlingshire. She told the court she twice met Kelly for pre-test counselling before breaking the news he was HIV positive. Quote, Stephen's results had come back with a positive for HIV, so I was expecting to have to give him that news, end quote. She told James Drummond Young, QC, prosecuting, quote, I spoke to him about the result of his test, what it would mean and what could happen afterwards, end quote. Ms. Thompson said that during counselling, she gave him information about medical help, how he should tell his family and on his sexual behaviour. Quote, it would particularly be about safe sex and sexual behaviour. It is quite specific and many times quite intimate as well. End quote. The court heard that Kelly said he was heterosexual and sexually active, and that Miss Thompson had given him specific advice about safe sex and the necessity of barrier contraception. Ms. Thompson said she also discussed how best to tell prospective partners he was HIV positive. Under cross-examination from defence counsel Donald Findlay QC, Ms. Thompson was asked whether she thought Kelly would have been secretive about his condition. Quote, I found him to be intelligent around the issue of people needing to know. End quote. Later, Andrew Lee Brown, a professor at Edinburgh University and a specialist in HIV, said he had investigated an apparent breakout at Glenochle in 1993 while Kelly was a prisoner. His team found 14 men with the virus. The professor agreed that, given other information, it was possible to identify the likely source. The trial continues. And, my lord, the BBC keeps us updated with daily accounts of proceedings, where on the 15th of February they report, Mother of three, Anne Craig, 34, wept as she gave evidence in the case of Stephen Kelly at the High Court in Glasgow. On the third day of the trial, Ms. Craig said Mr. Kelly broke the news to her in March 1994. The couple were living together at the time in a flat in Ravens Park Street, Glasgow, when he told her, quote, a story, end quote, about AIDS. She said, quote, he told me he had received a phone call from an ex-girlfriend who was dying of AIDS. He said he had to go to Glasgow Royal Infirmary. He had been there and they had tested him positive of HIV. He told me I would probably be infected as well because of the nature of the intercourse we were having. Miss Craig, whose address was given as care of the police, told the court she had met Kelly at a party she was attending during a visit to Glasgow and had initially spent a night talking with him. Quote, Mr. Kelly was telling me how all his family had let him down, how he had nobody, how everybody had betrayed him. She said. She said Mr. Kelly told her he had been an intravenous drug user before going into prison 2 years earlier. Quote, I had heard a lot on the news previously to that about HIV. I did ask him was he affected, that he had not caught AIDS. He replied that he had been tested. It was a matter of process that they were tested in prison and that he had tested negative. End quote. Miss Craig told how, on the same day, she and Kelly had begun a relationship. She said, quote, I specifically asked Mr. Kelly, was there any reason, other than pregnancy, that we would need to use safe sex, and he replied, no, end quote. Miss Craig then told how shortly before Mr. Kelly had told her she might have HIV, she had felt unwell, quote. Mr. Kelly took me to Glasgow Royal Infirmary. They put some monitors on me and said that I was fine, end quote. She went home but continued to feel unwell for at least 2 weeks and described her symptoms as being, quote, like flu. End quote. She said she asked her boyfriend to take her to a doctor but told the court Mr. Kelly, quote, just kept putting it off, end quote. It was only when Kelly told her he had HIV that she went to a doctor, she added. Miss Craig told the court how she was referred to Ruckell Hospital by her doctor, where she met a member of staff for HIV testing and received the shattering news. Miss Craig said she had discussed at the hospital her relationship with Mr. Kelly and been told that their sexual practices had put her at an extremely high risk. She was asked by Mr. Drummond Young QC, prosecuting, quote, had you ever been an intravenous drug user? She replied, not at that time. Miss Craig told the court how her boyfriend admitted to her that his earlier tale of how he had contracted HIV was a lie. They continued their relationship for a while, but she said she had now had no contact with Mr. Kelly since 1996 or 1997. Mr. Drummond Young then asked Miss Craig to look at a document which she said was a letter. Miss Craig told the court that Mr. Kelly had asked her to write and sign the letter in which she promised he would not be prosecuted. Miss Craig's voice shook with emotion as she read the first part of the letter. Quote, my name is Stephen Kelly, and I am having a relationship with Anne Craig, and through sexual intercourse, I passed HIV to Anne. This is a statement saying that Anne accepts full responsibility for this, and thereof will not prosecute me for passing on to her the disease. Signed, Stephen Kelly. Miss Craig told the court she had been forced by mind games and emotional abuse to sign the letter, which was dated October 1995. Then, my lord, on the 16th of February 2001, The fourth day of the trial, Kelly's defence, Dr. Finlay QC, cross-examines Miss Craig, where the BBC reported Donald Finlay QC for the defence said Miss Craig, 34, had made the allegation against Mr. Kelly after contracting HIV herself. Mr. Finlay said, quote, "When you first had sex with Mr. Kelly, you either knew he was HIV from your point of view because the people you met knew and it was no secret. And from this point of view, he assumed that you knew. Or maybe the two of you knew because this attraction just got in the way of things and you decided to run the risk anyway." End quote. He put it to her that after she was diagnosed HIV positive in March 1994, she had turned on Kelly and blamed him for infecting her. Mr. Finlay added, quote, "I suggest that you looked in the mirror and saw someone who had ruined their life and perhaps the lives of other people. And at that point, there were two people you could blame. You could blame yourself or you could blame him. It is never easy to blame yourself, and you decided it was Stephen Kelly's fault. Is that true?" End quote. She replied, quote, "No, sir, it is not." End quote. Under prosecution questioning, Miss Craig said that contracting HIV had had a devastating effect on her and that she had lost touch with her family. Miss Craig said, quote, "It took a long time for my family to come around to understanding what it meant. There is only my mother who I can depend on. I am only just rebuilding my relationship with my sister in Ireland." End quote. She then described her state of mind and health in the early part of 1994 at around the time she was diagnosed. Quote, "I was scared and numb. I was confused. There were so many emotions I was feeling at that time," said Miss Craig. She then repeated her allegation that she had only tried heroin when Kelly told her he had caught HIV from a girlfriend rather than in Glenochle prison, as later emerged, and that she might be positive. With that, her evidence ended and she left the court. And, my lord, the trial continues, where on Tuesday the 20th of February 2001, we hear from both a retired sexual health counsellor and taped interviews with Stephen Kelly that he gave upon his arrest, where the BBC report, retired counsellor James Black told Donald Finlay QC, defending, "Miss Craig seemed resigned to her status and that she was more concerned for one of her daughters who was in care." Mr. Black, who was the head of HIV testing and counselling centre at Glasgow's Runcle Hospital, told Mr. Finlay, "Miss Craig had several consultations with him within Mr. Kelly's presence." He said, quote, "To be fair to Mr. Kelly, at no stage did she utter any condemnation of him." End quote. The jury also heard details of a 45-minute taped interview Mr. Kelly had with police in May 1999. During the interview, the accused, Mr. Kelly, told Detective Inspector Cameron Cavin he had sex with Miss Craig during their second meeting. It happened after he took her back to his homeless hostel, but he denied that he had discussed any health issues with her beforehand or had used any form of protection. Quote, "Was it something you considered?" asked the detective. "No," he replied. Mr. Kelly told the police that in their continuing relationship, they moved in together, his two children and her children, and continued to have sex nightly. When asked again if pregnancy or any other health risks were discussed, Mr. Kelly claimed Miss Craig wanted to get pregnant. He also alleged that he had heard stories she had been a prostitute in Manchester, had sold drugs and had AIDS, but he had shrugged them off. And my lord, the BBC continued to report on this taped interview the following day on the 21st of February 2001, where they state, asked if he had discussed his condition with Miss Craig, Kelly at first alleged he had spoken about it before he slept with her. But later in the interview, he told Detective Sergeant Cameron Cavin of Strathclyde Police that he had not mentioned to her that he had the virus. The detective asked, quote, "Did you tell Anne you had HIV? To which Kelly replied, "Yes, I told her." Detective Cavin said, "Before you had sex?" Kelly replied, "I never told her about it before I had sex. I never told her that. I never told her anything." The detective went on to ask, "Why didn't you tell her you had HIV? Kelly said that he could not answer that question. Detective Cavin said Miss Craig had alleged that she had asked Kelly about the risk of HIV infection at the hostel before they slept together. Kelly said, quote, She asked if I was ever scared of catching anything, HIV, anything like that, and I said no. I asked her if she was ever scared of catching it, and she said no. The prosecution's case was concluded on Wednesday, and no evidence was presented in Kelly's defence. Then, my lord, the following day, on Thursday the 22nd of February 2001, both sides make their closing arguments to the jury, where the BBC report. In defence of Kelly, Mr. Finlay described the former's whirlwind relationship with Miss Craig as, quote, a marriage made in hell, end quote. Mr. Finlay said the case should be dismissed because Miss Craig knew about the dangers of having sexual intercourse with Kelly. Mr. Finlay said, quote, there may be pain, there may be distress, there may be tragedy in all this, but what there is not is a crime, end quote. Mr. Finlay alleged Miss Craig had learned enough about his sexual history before they went to bed to know that unprotected sex with Kelly would be dangerous. Kelly told her he had been promiscuous in the past, had used heroin, and had spent time in prison. Yet she failed to heed the warnings and convinced herself there was no danger. If anybody else had given her that advice, it would have been irresponsibility verging on the criminal. Nobody in their sane and sober senses would give that advice to themselves. End quote. Mr. Finlay said Miss Craig had only pursued Kelly through the courts because she sought to blame him for her life's downward turn following her infection. Mr. Finlay said, quote, what you have to believe and be satisfied of is that Anne Craig's account is true. If you are not satisfied of that beyond reasonable doubt, then this prosecution is at an end. End quote. Earlier, Advocate Depute James Drummond Young QC, prosecuting, told the jury Kelly had lied to Miss Craig about his HIV status in spite of knowing what the effect would be. He said Kelly had been advised by medical staff at Glenochle Prison about the dangers of having unprotected sex with him. He said nurses told the court Kelly had, quote, shown intelligence, end quote, in understanding the consequences of his actions. Mr. Young said, quote, the question you have to answer is whether Mr. Kelly knew what the risk was of contracting HIV through unprotected sexual intercourse. Mr. Kelly clearly knew what he was doing and that there was a serious risk of harm to Miss Craig, but he did it anyway, not caring for the danger which came to pass. End quote. Oh, my lord, an insight into an actual real court as opposed to our little setup here.
Mr. Hampson, how did they rule in this matter?
With that, my lord, the jury, made up of 10 men and 5 women, had to decide if Stephen Robert Kelly was guilty or not guilty of the allegations made against him at trial. Now, the verdict came the following day.
Stephen Kelly embarked on a carefree sexual relationship with a new girlfriend, despite being told 6 months earlier he was HIV positive. Today at Glasgow Crown Court, he was found guilty of culpable and reckless conduct in having unprotected sex and passing on the virus. The court heard he lied and pretended he was not infected. Kelly was serving a jail sentence at Glenochle Prison near Glasgow in the summer of 1993 when he was told he was infected from sharing needles to inject heroin. At a party the following January, he met Anne Craig, seen here on the right, and the couple slept together within hours. Despite asking if it was safe, Kelly told the mother of three not to worry. The jury was told by defence counsel Donald Findlay QC this was one of the most difficult, distressing and harrowing cases he'd been involved in 25 years. The judge, Lord Mackay, also described it as an anxious case with pitiful evidence. But one AIDS charity said the prosecution could prove harmful.
I think there's a real danger that this could further exclude people who have HIV positive and make it harder for them to disclose their status, not actually easier.
Kelly, who is now 33, will be sentenced next month after the judge has studied medical reports. Terry Lloyd, ITN, Glasgow High Court.
And on the 16th of March 2001, Stephen Kelly was sentenced, where The Guardian stated under the headline, HIV man jailed for knowingly infecting lover. A man found guilty of infecting his girlfriend with the HIV virus was jailed for 5 years yesterday in a case that has made British legal history and caused an outcry by HIV and human rights campaigners. It is the first time in the UK that anyone has been convicted of deliberately infecting another person with the virus, and the sentence has been condemned by campaigners who say it will only criminalise the disease and further stigmatise and alienate sufferers. There are also concerns that police investigating the case were able to seize evidence of blood samples from a confidential clinical trial to use in the prosecution. Sentencing him, the judge, Lord McKay of Drumadoon, said Kelly had shown total disregard for Ms. Craig, and the jail term reflected the gravity of the charge and the severe consequences of his actions. Quote, "She has suffered several years of serious illness and her life expectancy has been seriously reduced," he said. The judge said it was for the prison authorities and Scottish ministers to decide whether a deterioration in Kelly's medical condition warranted early release from prison. Kelly showed no emotion as he was led away to begin his sentence. In a statement released afterwards, Ms. Craig said the sentence was irrelevant. Quote, "I have no comment to make on the severity or leniency of the sentence, as it's irrelevant to me. All I wanted was for the jury to hold Mr. Kelly responsible for what has happened to me, and I was delighted by its decision. Mr. Kelly refused to accept responsibility for this offence, but the court did that for him. This was all that mattered to me." End quote. The Guardian also goes on to say, at the Face West support group in Glasgow, Director Charlie McMillan said they had already had calls from sufferers following the trial. Quote, "People are just very worried and very unclear what the limits are. Will it relate to use of dirty needles or mother-to-child transmission? The boundaries are so unclear," end quote. Lawyers for Kelly told the judge that he had believed Ms. Craig had known of his HIV status. Defence counsel Petra Collins said the couple had embarked on a relationship shortly after Kelly had lost his long-term partner and had been diagnosed with HIV. She said he had not shown any symptoms for some time, but had recently started taking combination therapy drugs. Quote, "He is suffering, as Anne Craig is suffering, and at this stage in both their lives, it is not helpful to define who is suffering the most. This is a tragedy for both of them and for both of their families." End quote.
Mr. Hampson, did the party concerned submit an appeal?
Stephen Kelly didn't appeal and served his sentence. And one of the articles alluded to the controversy over blood samples used as evidence. This rumbled on for years after Stephen's conviction. The Independent newspaper cited Stephen's conviction on the 25th of August 2003 under the headline, "Anonymous Research Data Used in Prosecution." And the article states, "The case of Stephen Kelly, who was found guilty in February 2001 of culpable and reckless behaviour, exemplifies the way the police and courts can access medical details collected as part of a research project. Kelly, who was HIV positive, was sentenced to 5 years at Glasgow High Court for having unprotected sex, knowing he was risking the life of his girlfriend, Anne Craig, a mother of three who later developed AIDS. Kelly and Craig had been in a study of HIV transmission between 1993 and 1995, run by Professor Andrew Lee Brown, then of Edinburgh University and now at the University of California in San Diego. The experimental protocol anonymized the personal details, similarly to how the UK Biobank intends to deal with personal information. Under the protocol, every volunteer was given a patient number, and their actual name and identifying details were stored separately within a secure computer. Researchers studying a biomedical databank can normally just access patient numbers rather than names, but it is still possible to trace all information to a named individual if someone has access to the code. During the investigation of Kelly, police obtained the anonymized codes from the patient's medical records and used them to seize the scientific evidence that established the genetic similarity between the AIDS virus Kelly and his girlfriend had. Using this medical research data, the prosecution could show that Kelly had passed the virus to his girlfriend at a time when he knew he was HIV positive. Professor Lee Brown was angry at the information being used. Quote, "These databases will have an important role to play in developing our understanding of genetic variation and disease, but what will protect them from seizure by legal authorities?" And my lord, Stephen Kelly was 33 years old when he was sentenced in 2001. HIV medications have managed to control the virus since antiretroviral treatment, ART, had become available. So, naturally, I looked up Stephen Kelly and found him. But soon learnt that Stephen had passed away in Glasgow as recently as 2003, aged 55 years old. His death is listed, but his certificate is not yet available to understand if HIV was perhaps a contributor to his cause of death. And my lord, as for Anne Craig, I wasn't able to find what happened to her next, but I did find an interesting article which states, the British Criminal Injuries Compensation Board on Saturday awarded a record £28,000 in damages to a woman who was infected with HIV by a man who knew he had the virus. But the board rescinded a quarter of the judgment because she was, quote, negligent with her own safety, end quote, by engaging in unprotected sex, the Sunday Mail reports. In the first government compensation award given under new legislation passed earlier this year for victims of HIV/AIDS, the board awarded Anne Craig the maximum £25,000 for her injuries and disablement and an additional £3,000 for mental anguish, but withheld £6,000 because she did not use a condom during sex. Stephen Kelly, who earlier this year became the first person in Great Britain to be convicted of recklessly transmitting HIV, repeatedly had unprotected sex with Craig over a six-month period, despite knowing that he had HIV, and lied to Craig when she inquired about his disease status. He is currently serving 5 years in prison. Craig said she was disappointed by the board's decision, adding that she did not, quote, need to be told again how stupid and naive, end quote, she was to have unprotected sex with Kelly, a former drug user, who she said also has hepatitis C. Quote, I've already paid a huge price for what's happened to me, and now I'm paying again, she said, adding that the court battle was, quote, never about money. I wanted justice and I got that in court when Stephen was convicted, end quote. Tricia Marwick, a member of the Scottish Parliament, called the Criminal Injuries Compensation Board decision, quote, outrageous, adding that the board was acting, quote, as a second judge and jury in this case. She explained that the, quote, responsibility was on Kelly, not Craig, end quote, because he knew of his HIV status and lied to Craig about being HIV positive. However, law professor Robert Black said that the Criminal Injuries Compensation Board applied civil principles to the case, explaining, quote, if the injured person contributed to their injuries, then that, under current law, must be taken into account. It's called contributory negligence, end quote. Craig's lawyer said she will not appeal that decision because she, quote, wants this whole ordeal to be over and to get on with the rest of her life, end quote.
Mr. Hampson, I believe you have another series of articles you wish to bring before the listeners.
That's right, my lord, because a few years later, a similar case came before the courts in 2006, where the accused was alleged to have infected a man with concern that it was deliberate, and there were many others who had also been deliberately infected. Having reviewed many newspaper articles within the archives, I will briefly outline the facts and concerns of the case as they were widely reported on the 20th of June 2006, where one article reported, Porter was yesterday sentenced to 32 months in prison for knowingly infecting boyfriend of 2 years with HIV, which then led to AIDS. Porter pleaded guilty to recklessly inflicting gross bodily harm in court last month. It was reported today that the blonde hair salon receptionist embarked on a campaign of revenge over several years after contracting HIV from a former black lover in 2000. Police believe Porter regularly had unprotected sex with young black men encountered at nightclubs in London and other cities across England. Police denied that they had spoken to 2,000 men as part of the investigation, but reports today said police had traced 24 men who they believed had sex with Porter. But only 4 men agreed to be tested, one of whom tested HIV positive. One of the tested men today said, Porter caught HIV off a black guy and now they're on a payback mission. All the guys Porter slept with are black, he told The Sun. The 37-year-old man had a three-month relationship with Porter. Police launched their year-long investigation in May last year after the man was told by a mutual friend that Porter had HIV. It was also reported that Porter allowed the 31-year-old man, now infected with the virus, to believe that he was in fact the source of the infection. In court, he said he felt suicidal after he was diagnosed. Quote, besides the pain already suffered by me, my family and partner, I am petrified about what is to come. I know that my health will deteriorate, he said. Porter was charged in January this year, but reportedly slept with other young black men while on bail. Detective Sergeant Brian McCloskey said Porter refused to help police trace men that they had slept with. He said the men police had traced may just be the, quote, tip of the iceberg, end quote, and urged others to come forward. My lord, I find this case, compared to Stephen Kelly's, incredibly concerning. And my immediate concern is not that the laws around HIV disclosure and transmission are different between England and Wales versus Scotland, or that Stephen Kelly denied the charges against him and went to trial versus Porter admitting the charge of, quote, recklessly inflicting grievous bodily harm, or with Stephen Kelly accused and convicted of infecting one person with HIV versus Porter also infecting one person, but possibly infecting many others, and that the deliberate act of continuing to have unprotected sex after being charged of this crime and then out on bail is concerned. But for me, it is the disturbing differences in the sentences imposed. Kelly was sentenced to 5 years in prison, Porter a mere 32 months, likely out after 15 months, given good behaviour. Both Kelly and Porter were subject to the same media scrutiny, especially by the tabloids, and it may become clear why so many well-known journalists at the time, bizarrely, came to Porter's defence in their own columns, like that of Janet Street Porter in The Independent, who wrote on the 22nd of June 2006, quote, "None of the men involved opted to use a condom. Everyone concerned was over the age of consent, all intelligent people who knew the dangers of sex with numerous partners," end quote. But my lord, I have omitted to share with you and the listeners one crucial fact in this case. Porter was in fact at the time of this case a 43-year-old woman named Sarah Jane Porter. Now my lord, I cannot help but wonder how many listening today perhaps rolled their eyes, slightly exhausted at hearing me share the Stephen Kelly case, and assumed that this was another case of another man recklessly infecting innocent sexual partners with the mucky and dreaded HIV virus. Come on, who's guilty? Anyhow, she's made her point. But my lord, it is interesting that both Stephen Kelly and Sarah Jane Porter were reported on equally and equally vilified by the tabloids. Although Stephen's trial was reported on a daily basis by the media, in Sarah Jane's case, we only really hear the story when it breaks upon her being sentenced. But as we will come on to hear, Stephen did not receive any sympathetic press coverage for the crime he was convicted of, despite him pleading not guilty. Yet Sarah Jane Porter did receive lashings of sympathy while she pleaded guilty and is suspected of perhaps being guilty of so much more of the same, despite it not being proven. The only difference between the pair is obvious. Stephen was a man and Sarah Jane Porter is a woman. Yet they were both said to be guilty of the same act, passing on HIV to another person, yet one received a harsher sentence than the other. On the 19th of June 2006, the Evening Standard dedicated its whole front page to the story where they ran the headline, "Revenge of HIV Woman on Four Lovers." With a colour photo of convicted Sarah Jane Porter, the article states, "A woman was jailed today for deliberately infecting a man with the AIDS virus. Sarah Jane Porter, 43, a receptionist at the Vidal Sassoon Salon in Knightsbridge, encouraged at least four lovers to have unprotected sex with her, knowing they were at risk. One of them, a 31-year-old man, was infected with HIV. The others were in the clear but had to go through the trauma of them and their partners being tested. Porter of Kennington, who has a 6-year-old son, was jailed for 32 months at Inner London Crown Court after admitting grievous bodily harm. Scotland Yard launched a year-long investigation after a 36-year-old man contacted them last May, saying he had been in a relationship with a woman who had encouraged him to have unprotected sex. He was told by a mutual friend that his lover was HIV positive. He and two other men were found to be free of the disease. Forensic tests showed that Porter was the source of the infection of the 31-year-old man. Detectives say they conducted an exhaustive inquiry to find any former lovers, but say it is likely there were other men they have been unable to identify. They urged any others to either contact them or get an AIDS test. Detective Sergeant Brian McCloskey of Brixton's Community Safety Unit said, quote, "It is not easy to approach men to ask if they have slept with a particular person, and once found, we were then introducing them to a potential nightmare. We located four victims. One was infected and the quality of his life has been severely curtailed, but, for the others, there was still heartbreak and stress for them and their current partners as they waited for test results," end quote. He said he could not comprehend why Porter had set about this, quote, "deliberate chain of events," end quote, but added that revenge might have been one possible motive, quote, "Porter herself was a victim. She was infected by another partner, so I can understand people thinking that revenge was a motive, but she never told us," end quote. Porter was diagnosed with the disease sometime between 1999 and 2001. The 31-year-old victim said his life had been devastated, adding, quote, "Before being infected, I led a happy, carefree life. I considered myself to be baggage-free. Now everything has changed and my life will never be the same again," end quote. In mitigation, Porter's defence said she was in denial that she had the disease. A former colleague said, quote, "Sarah was always so lovely and quite bubbly with the customers. I am completely in shock about it," end quote. And, my lord, on the same day, the BBC reported the same story with additional insight into the sentencing, where they reported, "At the Inner London Crown Court, Porter was told she will serve half her sentence in prison and half on licence. After reading out a statement from the victim, the judge said, quote, "The one person who he loved had lied to him time and time again. It was her cruelty and dishonesty that made him feel worthless, and after that, he had suicidal tendencies," end quote. And, my lord, as I stated earlier, I was disturbed by the many column inches that female journalists surrendered for Sarah Jane Porter merely because she was a woman, given they remained extremely silent prior and since when the same cases have been brought against men. And here is what Joan Smith said in her column in The Independent on the 25th of June 2006. "When Sarah Jane Porter found she was HIV positive, she was so angry that she embarked on a mission to pass on the virus to as many men as possible. Porter, who is white, became HIV positive after a relationship with a black man and directed her rage at young black men she met in clubs up and down the country. When one of her victims went to the police, she refused point blank to help them, forcing detectives to appeal for more of her, quote, countless, end quote, sexual partners to come forward. On Monday, Ms. Porter pleaded guilty to a charge of recklessly inflicting grievous bodily harm on another man and was sent to jail for 32 months. There's just one problem with this lurid tale of a heartless AIDS avenger. It isn't supported by the evidence. And while a sick, single mother spends her first weekend in jail, separated from her six-year-old daughter, the case raises important questions about sexual mores and individual responsibility in our AIDS-aware culture." Oh, my lord. That's all very well, but Stephen Kelly was sentenced to 5 years. He had the HIV/AIDS virus and was just as sick in regards to needing medical care for the condition as Sarah Jane Porter was. Stephen Kelly had two children who had lost their mother prior to him being infected himself. So, two children were without their father and he pleaded not guilty but was ultimately convicted. So where was this journalist then? She makes no mention of Stephen's conviction only 5 years earlier, widely publicised as it was the first in Scotland under Scottish law and the first in the United Kingdom. She makes no mention of it, or that it was, as she seems to be alluding here, equally barbaric to put the only remaining parent ill with HIV/AIDS of two children in Stephen's case in the slammer. I assume because he is a man, he deserves it, he should have known better. Anyhow, she goes on, "It is worth pointing out here that the virus hasn't just arrived in this country. Only someone who had spent the past 2 decades on Mars could be unaware of the risks of unprotected sex, and men are as free to insist on using condoms as women." And back to Janet Street Porter's column, oddly in the same newspaper, The Independent, on the 22nd of June 2006, she wrote, "Sarah Jane Porter sits in prison, boo-woo-woo, serving her 32 months..."
Mr. Hampson, please approach the bench.
Oh, Judge Gloria said I've got to read it without doing the sound effects. Right. I can't help it, I'm sorry. Sarah Jane Porter sits in prison serving a 32-month sentence for inflicting grievous bodily harm, having been tried and found guilty once by a court of law and once by the British press. Her crime? Infecting a man with the AIDS virus. Reading the press coverage of this case, Ms. Porter sounds like an angel of death, having had unprotected sex with at least four men after having been diagnosed HIV positive. You would be forgiven for thinking that her behaviour was way beyond reckless, verging on the sadistic. But does the punishment fit the crime?
Mr. Hampson.
Fucking no.
Mr. Hampson.
My lord, if Janet Street Porter wants my answer, then it would be no. Because Sarah Jane Porter should have been given the same sentence as her male counterpart in this case, I'd be referring to Stephen Kelly. If not longer, given the allegations made against her, as HIV does not discriminate on the grounds of gender. Just because Ms. Porter is a woman with HIV does not mean she should face a lighter sentence for the same act, of which she pleaded guilty for. Anyhow, the lovely Janet Street Porter, because I do like her, I don't agree with her on this, but I do like her, goes on. In their eagerness to demonise Ms. Porter, journalists seem to have overlooked the tragic situation she found herself in.
Mr. Hampson, is it relevant to the matter at hand?
As you know from many of the episodes we've covered, my lord, I've been trawling through the archives in regards to the HIV/AIDS pandemic, and I have to say I've seen far worse about many people living with HIV, or people that were just merely associated with someone with a HIV or AIDS diagnosis. So, Janet Street Porter, get a grip, please. But, my lord, if, like me, you haven't come around to Janet Street Porter's way of thinking, wait, because there's more.
Very well.
Over a period of time, this single mother struggled to bring up her son and mentally deal with her predicament. She was in denial about her medical situation, and though she received counselling, she gradually abandoned the sessions. At this point, her mental state deteriorated and she became anorexic, then suicidal, attempting to take her own life on several occasions.
Oh.
And while I don't agree with much of what these two journalists state, I must stress that both journalists, Janet Street Porter and John Smith, do state further along in their articles that they do not condone the behaviour of Sarah Jane Porter and acknowledge that she had a responsibility to inform her partners that she was HIV positive, and the articles can be read in full on the Extra Tea blog. The link is in the show notes. Then, my lord, the Independent, again, published an article with a candid picture of Sarah Jane in front of some birthday candles, joyfully swinging a necklace around her neck as she looks up into the distance with her blonde flickback fringe and bob, all in a bid to portray Sarah Jane Porter as some innocent victim for a charge that, let's not forget, she pleaded guilty to, and where she further refused to comment or assist police on the allegations that were put before her, as was her right, I suppose, to remain silent. And the article is an array of friends that have come forward saying Sarah Jane Porter is, quote, victim of a miscarriage of justice and a vindictive police campaign, end quote. The article goes on to state that her lawyers will make a formal complaint about the police handling of the case and further appeal the sentence. Ms. Porter completes her first week in prison tomorrow, quote, she can't see her little boy for at least 16 months, end quote, a friend said, quote, he's being looked after by friends. He knows his mum is in prison, but he doesn't know why. He's an innocent little boy and we're trying to protect him from that. He wasn't allowed to watch television for 2 days or listen to the radio. He doesn't understand. He misses his mum, end quote. I mean, how far can they stretch this sob story of the fact that she is a mother? She pleaded guilty to the charges. She chose to remain silent, as I say, was her right. She infected one man we know of with HIV. Sarah Jane Porter is a walking definition of selfishness. And while it may not be pleasant, the child can attend prison visits to see his mother. It's 16 months, not 16 years. Aged 6 to 7 years, I doubt that these visits will be memories that will trouble him in later life. And why is there no sympathy for the man that she has infected with HIV/AIDS? Here, we're all meant to feel sorry for poor old Sarah Jane Porter, convict. Ugh, ran over. The article concludes, Scotland Yard said forensic examination had shown Miss Porter was the source of infection in an HIV-positive man. In a statement, it said the inquiry had required, quote, a great deal of time and sensitivity on the part of the officers, end quote. And Miss Porter had given no help in identifying other, quote, potential victims, end quote. My Lord, while putting this case to our listeners, I appreciate I have been quite critical of it. However, my criticism of this case is not with Ms. Porter and her actions, but how the press, the journalists concerned, and Ms. Porter's friends used her gender and her status as a mother to garner sympathy to play down her conviction when no such sympathy was nor had been afforded to men in the exact same predicament as Ms. Porter, nor the young man that she infected. After all, she pleaded guilty, either on the basis of her own moral conscience, if she has one, or on the advice of her legal team, given the evidence before her. I could find no trace of an appeal in terms of Ms. Porter's sentence, which doesn't mean one wasn't lodged nor heard, just that I couldn't find one. Nor could I find out what happened to Ms. Porter next, but given I, Ms. Porter, and the man she infected all live with the same condition, I just hope, to some degree, they are getting on with their lives and making the most of what the future has to hold, especially in an age where we have access to effective HIV treatment. And that, my lord, concludes this episode.
Mr. Hampson presented a series of poignant cases today, illustrating the complex interplay between victimhood and culpability. While it is crucial to acknowledge the moral and legal violations that have occurred, we must also consider the profound impact of an HIV or AIDS diagnosis. Such a condition, undeniably cruel in its nature, cannot serve as a justification for criminal actions. However, it undoubtedly shapes the narrative surrounding each individual. Each case serves as a stark reminder that beneath the offences, there existed a life, one that preceded the incidents we have just heard. And for many, these lives are now but memories, tragically cut short. In reflecting on these stories, we are compelled to recognize the humanity of those involved and the heavy burdens they carried, reinforcing the importance of empathy in our discussions of justice and morality. This podcast is adjourned until next week.
Court rise!
You can check out and read all the newspaper articles mentioned in this episode, along with extra snippets of information, on the Extra Tea blog. You can find the link in the show notes. If you've enjoyed this episode, then don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. Until the next episode, you can find me on Instagram at The Lost Boys of Soho.